March 7th, 2014 meeting of the Chicago State University Board of Trustees is hereby called to order. Ms. Phillips, would you please call the roll?
Trustee Curtin?
Here.
Trustee Joyce?
Here.
Trustee Lee?
Here.
Trustee Reyna?
Here.
Trustee Smith?
Here.
Trustee Young?
Here.
Trustee Lowell?
Here.
A quorum exists for the business of the board to begin. Ms. Phillips, will you verify that the notice for this meeting has been given pursuant to the requirements of the Open Meetings Act?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, the meeting notice requirements have been met. Notices were posted 48 hours before this meeting in the Cook Administration, Student Union, and Academic Library buildings.
Our first item is to approve the minutes from previous meetings. The December 13th, 2013 meeting and the February 11th, 2014 meeting, we need to approve both of those minutes.
Second.
Trustee Curtin?
Aye.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Lee?
Yes.
Trustee Reyna?
Yes.
Trustee Smith?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Zola?
Aye.
We'll have our president's report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, trustee members. The administration has recently met with student leaders to hear their concerns and discuss how the university is addressing their concerns. It was a very fruitful dialogue. Among the issues discussed was the need for a child care center, and this is number two on our priority list in dealing with the state, and we have had extensive discussions with the state reps. We are aggressively pursuing the means to make a child care center a reality as soon as possible. Today we have Darius Sanders. Darius, would you please stand? Darius is representing our president of student government, who's in class right now. Thank you very much, Darius. Yesterday, we met with the Senate Appropriations Committee, chaired by Senator Katowski. Among the items that we updated the legislators on was our 61% reduction in audit findings, the unique nature of Chicago State University student profile, the $4.5 million in scholarships that we gave out this year to 1,045 students, and the grade point average was 3.25 grade point average. And we are asking for those dollars again for next year. We are looking for a productive 2014 with many big items on the horizon. The Obama Library bid, we are a very legitimate. We are going for that library. The Westside campus expansion, the contiguous community, continued growth of international presence in India, China, in Switzerland, and we are now looking into a program that is in Austria, in Salzburg. Expanded student recruitment efforts into suburbs and neighboring states to ensure that we diversify our student base at the university. Cyberbullying. Today we will have the first reading of a new policy regarding cyberbullying. The purpose of this policy is to protect members of the CSU family from bullying through any form of electronic communication. No part of the policy should be seen as an attempt to limit any individual's speech rights, but instead as a means to protect all CSU staff, faculty, and students from unwarranted harassment. Internet security policy. We will also consider a new information security policy. The goal of this policy is to ensure the security of restricted or sensitive data and the university IT resources. To further this goal, the university seeks to adopt an information security policy which defines the responsibilities and general security measures for data specific to the use of IT resources managed by ITD at the university. The policy sets forth guidelines relating the security of access to university network systems and resources and internet security. Mr. Chair, that is my report.
Are there any questions from any of the board trustees? I just have one question, Mr. President, in terms of the presidential library.
Yes, sir.
Now, I read in the newspaper where the mayor was talking about having one bid from Chicago. Now, how does that affect us in terms of our individual efforts?
Well, two things. One, I received a phone call from, I cannot say the person's name, it would not be appropriate, but someone who is dealing with the presidential library, and they were calling in the official capacity the very morning that that article came out, and the person said to me, Wayne, I just want you to know that that article is not speaking for the president or the presidential library committee, and that there's not been discussion for a joint library to be done for the city of Chicago. That at this point, we are still expecting individual universities to apply. That's one. Two is that the proposal or RSVP will come out very soon. He said that we should get it within a week or two. And after that, that he wants to sit down with us and have a discussion. We are a very viable candidate for it. We have the moral high ground within the entire state for this library. This is the community that Barack, established his foundation. And let me also say that this is the opportunity for our country. There's never been a presidential library placed on a predominantly black or historically black college or university, never in the history of the United States. And if you look forward another 50 or 100 years, I don't know if our chances will stand too strong to get one then for the next 150 years. This is the first opportunity, and it may be the last opportunity, to have it placed on a HBCU or PBI. So we have a moral high ground here.
Any other questions or comments? Then we'll move on to the report from Academic and Student Affairs. Trustee Joyce.
Dr. Henderson.
Good morning, trustees.
Good
Mr.
Morning.
Chairman.
Good morning.
Trustees, President, CSU faculty and staff, and guests. I will today give a brief report on the priorities of academic affairs, or what's been happening in academic affairs since we last met. The Westside campus. The Westside Steering Committee continues to meet, and it's made up of faculty, staff, the chairman, as well as external stakeholders who are from the West Side. One of the priorities for academic affairs is to start working with our project manager, Mr. Bruce Washington, in identifying a site or a couple of sites on the West Side so that we can serve students in the interim before we actually have our building on the West Side. So we have already started to look at some potential sites. The site is not identified. And when we do identify a site, we will be working with the Higher Learning Commission, the Illinois Board of Higher Ed, as well as the Department of Education to ensure that we will get their approvals to be able to serve students on the West Side in advance of us having that West Side building. Any questions about the West Side?
Questions from the trustees?
That was the West Side, okay, thank you.
Yes. Is there a budget for that acquisition?
Well, the $40 million that we received $40 million from the legislators some time ago, and so we have been working with $4 million to do the market analysis, and we were given approval to use some of the funds to do some marketing as we prepare to venture off into the West Side. So we were down in Springfield yesterday, and one of the items that is a priority is that we need operating dollars. Yeah. So Senator Lightford, who is also on the committee and is one of our champion legislators, as well as others, along with our governmental affairs liaison, Fira Musket, and we're working on getting additional dollars so we will have the operating dollars to open the campus. In addition to that, we've been working with, we have a quality committee that's made up of faculty and staff. So we were giving the 10-year approval for accreditation this summer. And we decided as an academic team or university not to stop meeting. So we meet every 2 weeks. It's a quality body. And we continue to review the criteria and the expectations of the Higher Learning Commission so that we continue to meet that and we don't scramble to work on that self-study when it comes up in 10 years. So things are going very well. We will be attending the North Central. They have their annual meeting this April. We will be taking a team of faculty and staff to that meeting in April. And then I want to share that the last time when the last 2 years, that committee was led by two faculty members, Dr. Paul Musial and Dr. Gabe Mulugada. Well, this year we have the committee led by Dr. Tanya Hall. She's a professor in counseling. And we also have some subcommittees which are led by faculty and staff as well. So it's a faculty-driven initiative, and we feel that we are moving in the right direction to sustain that 10-year accreditation. In addition to that, our pharmacy program will be having a focus visit this March from the American Pharmacy Association, Pharmacists Association. It's their, they were accredited in 2012. We had our first accreditation. This is a focus visit to really ensure that we can continue to do what we said we were going to do and for them to check in to see how the program is going. We prepared the self-study. We feel very comfortable or favorable about the visit. And the next time we have a board meeting, we'll hopefully be able to give you an update on that visit. And then finally, our commencement is scheduled for May 15th. And I bring it up because Chicago State graduates close to 1,200 graduates annually. We often talk about the graduation rate of our first-time full-time freshmen, and that's less than 10% of the students who come to the university as new students. Again, over 50% of our new students are transfer students, and often we don't talk about the graduation rate that is associated with them. So our transfer graduation rate is 44%. Of course, that's not where we want it to be, but many of our students are part-time, they're working, and they just have, they're not your traditional college student who is attending college and living on campus. So with that said, our commencement is May 15th. Thank you again for your attendance at our fall commencement. I heard that it was, we've been having commencements for a long time, but it was the first time in a long time that we had all of our trustees present, and all of our students appreciated it, and we look forward to having you there again. With that, do you have any questions?
Excuse me, I have to, truth in lending here, I was not at the fall, and please don't write that. The other, I do have a question about the Westside campus.
Yes.
At this point, have there decisions been made, not physically what it's going to look like, but what it will look like in terms of course offerings, you know, the kind of student you're looking for, that kind of thing? Has that discussion taken place? And
finish your question.
I'm done.
Okay, thank you. There aren't any final decisions about all of the programs that will be there, but we have we had a market analysis, and we have some recommendations, and we're seriously looking at those recommendations. We know that the West Side will probably mirror the type of students that we have at the South Side campus, because they will be students who live in Chicago, who will be staying at home, and likely we will get transfer students from the other universities that surround that area. So we do know that in our first phase, there will be programs that are already approved by the university, because anything, if we do something different, then we would have to get approval to run a new program. So I do want to say for the record that we haven't started our discussions with the Higher Learning Commission, so nothing has been approved until we make a recommendation to them about those courses. And it would be for an additional site to, it would be an additional site from the Chicago State University and not a new campus.
Thank you.
I have a question. You mentioned graduation rates of first-time, full-time students, and then you also mentioned ones that are transfers. And clearly, this university has many, many more students who are not first-time, full-time.
Yes.
How do you ever summarize and average out any student who gets admitted here, and what is the rate of graduation, no matter what their status may be? So an overall graduation rate, do you know what that is?
Well, because... No, what we do is we look at the numbers,
mm-hmm.
and so I'd like to sit down with you and talk about.
Yeah, because you know, again, I think that it's unique that that you compare apples to apples and oranges to oranges, yes. And I think you're right. It's really fair if we understand the overall student that's here, and then have an expectation of a rate of graduation, and not just compare it to a first-time, full-time student, which would not represent this community. So I think we have to develop some metrics that looks at our university in a way that it attracts students, and base it on that kind of graduation rate. So I'd love to do that with you.
Yes, we do look at cohorts, for example. So we know that our pharmacy program has a graduation rate that's over 90%. You know, and we look at our athletes, we look at our honor students. So we have those various cohorts, and so I'll sit with you or with the trustees to talk about what that overall graduation number or rate would look
Thank
like.
Thank you.
Okay, no further questions? Thank you, Dr. Deans.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Cyberbullying. I'm not going to read the university cyberbullying policy in its entirety. Copies of the policy are available at my office. But the purpose of this policy is to enhance the university, Chicago State University's efforts to prevent and redress harassment within the university community by expressly addressing the problem of electronic harassment and cyberbullying. The university is committed to maintaining an educational, residential, and working environment that recognizes the inherent worth and dignity of every person, that fosters tolerance, understanding, mutual respect, and that permits students and employees to pursue goals free from harassment that substantially interferes with the educational opportunities, peaceful enjoyment of residence, physical security, terms and conditions of employment, collectively protected interests. Again, copies of the policy are available in my office for anybody who is interested in examining the policy.
Are we going to post the policy online or do something to make it more available to faculty and students than just having it in your office?
Yes, it will also be posted online.
Okay. Where did the policy come from?
Well, several universities across the country have adopted cyberbullying policy. This is sort of a conglomeration of those policies, of various policies that have been adopted by other universities.
Have any of the universities in this state adopted such a policy yet?
Northern Illinois has a policy. I believe the University of Illinois has a policy. Winston-Salem University in Massachusetts has a policy. Maryland. I mean, this is part of a trend of by universities to address the issue of harassment that comes from electronic mediums.
Just what do we do in terms of harassment that doesn't come from electronic?
The policy is broad in its scope, and so the university has in place a general harassment policy, but within this policy is language addressing harassment generally, that it does not emanate from an electronic medium.
Any other questions by board members?
Yes. How many times do we have to read this?
Three. This is the first one. But as I indicated, this will be placed online for the entire university community to look at.
Thank you, Mr. Cage. I'd like to hear from Mrs. Lashandra Peebles, please. Enrollment Management and Student Affairs.
Good morning, trustees.
Good morning.
I want to give you an overview of where we are with enrollment for spring 2014. As of February 27th, our enrollment was 5,279 students for spring. And with that, we have a total of 562 new students. Within this population, carrying over also from fall, our first-time full-time freshman ACT score is at 19. And I think that's significant for you to know. It's up 2 points from 17 over the past 2 years. The retention of our freshman cohort for first-time full-time freshmen has increased by 12.5%. And the retention of our new first-time full-time transfers has increased by 7.4%. As our president indicated earlier to all of you, we did go to Springfield yesterday, and he also shared with you our gratitude regarding the $4.6 million in scholarship funds. To date, we have allocated and awarded to students $4.5 million of that $4.6 million. And we have reserved about $100,000 to assist our students for summer session. I wanted to highlight that the majority of these dollars were used for retention efforts. You will see, as I already mentioned, that the retention is up, and it's due in part to the retention efforts we were able to do with the scholarship dollars. The average GPA of our students who receive the scholarships is a 3.25. As of March 5th, I took a look at what our admissions for fall 2014 looks like, and to date, we are up 11% for our undergraduate admissions. And I think that's in part due to many of the initiatives that have been put in place that will continue through summer of 2014, geared towards enhancing, of course, the application pool and also increasing that admission rate for our fall 2014. As was already mentioned in a previous board meeting, we had an open house back in the fall, and we have another one scheduled in April of 2014 to bring students on campus to showcase what we have to offer with our programs here at Chicago State. We have developed a telecounseling center that is actually run by students here at Chicago State University. They are given a script, and these students' task or pleasure is to call our admitted students and share with them about their experience at CSU, introduce themselves, talk about the programs they are a part of, and then answer any questions they might have about going to Chicago State. We are also developing a student ambassador program, and part of this program, we are inviting students to be a part of our recruitment team. These students will go to high schools, some of them their own high schools, some other high schools, and have kind of a lunch and learn discussions with potential students to attend Chicago State, as well as hosting them here on campus when they're here. We have also expanded our outreach efforts. You heard our president mention earlier that those outreach efforts are going beyond our state borders into the states of Iowa, Indiana, and Missouri, capitalizing on offering students in those areas in-state tuition for attending Chicago State from the Midwest region. And with that, I'll open it up for any questions you may have.
How many students did we have this time last year?
Okay, so let me get that for you. You want the actual number of students we had last year? Okay. 6107 this time last year. But I thought for fall or for spring? For spring?
Well, you gave us a number
for
of 52.
Okay.
And I'd like the
okay.
corresponding number for the same time last year.
Okay. Not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Spring last year, we had 5,412.
Okay. That's a big difference than 61.
That was from fall. Fall to spring enrollment typically goes down about 14-15%. It's pretty common around the country from university to university. So our persistence rate is right about 85%, which is typical.
So how many students did we have in the fall this year?
5,701.
5,701. Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Any further questions from board members? Hearing none. Thank you.
Thank you.
That concludes the Academic Affairs report.
Next, we have a report from Finance and Audit. Trustee Zola.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to take just a minute to acknowledge that we had a very professional and competent and wonderful internal auditor, Mr. Ken Clow, who left us recently. And now we have a very notable, reputable, and strong interim internal auditor whose name is Mr. Michael Mayo. Mr. Mayo, would you stand, please? So we want to welcome you to CSU and thank you for what you're going to do for us. I also want to take the time to congratulate all our faculty and staff who work so diligently to bring down the external audit findings. It's just been incredible. So if we can have a round of applause for those people. And a yeoman's job. Yeoman's job. Okay, having said that, Mr. Pinkleton, would you please give us your report?
Good morning, Trustee Zolar, Mr. Chairman, Mr. President, distinguished trustees. My name is Larry Pinkleton, Interim Vice President, Administration and Finance. I have two aspects to my report this morning. The first will be our cash position, and the second will be a brief review of our resolutions. Can I ask you to look in your books and locate the cash position report, please? On second thought, it looks like it's being handed out.
You understand all this stuff?
I do.
So do you.
I'm impressed. Oh, I've been impressed with it today.
Okay, as of February 24th, the net cash in banks was approximately $22.7 million. The university does have several balances on hand that would be considered restricted, which are in support of various initiatives that we're in the process of pursuing from a capital development standpoint. Our unrestricted cash balance as of 2/24 was $17.2 million. Looking at a 90-day projection, over the next 90 days, we have projected collections of approximately $26.9 million anticipated. Expenditures during that same time period, primarily a function of payroll and normal vendor payments, we are estimating at $32.7 million. And so factoring in our unrestricted cash position, the projected collections and expenditures over that time period, we're estimating a balance of $11.4 million in 90 days from now. Turning from there, looking at the university's state appropriation, our fiscal year 14 appropriation is at $42.2 million. Payments that have been received to date from the state are approximately $15.1 million, which translates into 36% of our budget. Looking at the residual, the balance due from the state, 27.1, 64% is outstanding. And then in terms of what we are expecting from the state, we have actually billed $28.4 million. So there's $9 million that we'd be expecting, $13 million we'd be expecting from the state based on expenditures that have been billed to date. Are there any questions on our cash position report?
Okay.
turning the corner to fiscal year 15, the budget process is well underway. The President did indicate that we just recently made a trip to Springfield to articulate the university's budget priorities for fiscal year 15 to the State Senate. Beyond that part of the process, the university's budget committee has also convened and met independently with each one of the vice presidents across the university. They've had an opportunity to state what their ask would be for the fiscal year 15 time period. We're still very much in the preliminary stages of evaluating all of those asks as it relates to the funding levels that we will be able to obtain in the fiscal year 15 time period. Beyond that, the state appropriation number is still very much up in the air. We don't know. We don't have exact figures at this point. We're aggressively working towards trying to ensure that those numbers are as big as they possibly can be. Obviously, that will contribute to the university's ongoing financial operation. But there's more to come there. Any questions on the preliminary budget steps relative to the fiscal year 15 time period? Okay. We do have four resolutions that are being brought forth by administration and finance as we turn the corner. Mr. Chairman, would you like me to read the resolutions one at a time, or would you like to vote on them in aggregate?
One at a time.
Okay. First resolution that we'd like to bring to the committee's, trustees' attention would be for tuition and fees. We're bringing forth a recommendation for tuition and fees in the undergraduate rate at 3%. It's important to note that the process that we've gone through to bring forth all recommendations for tuition and fees does include a full review by the tuition and fee committee, which is comprised of students, faculty, and staff. And so we do have the support as we bring forth these numbers going into the fiscal year 15 time period. The undergraduate rate we'd like to recommend for approval is 3%. The graduate rate we'd like to recommend for approval is 4%. The education doctorate we'd like to recommend a request for tuition increase of 6%. And finally, we'd like to increase pharmacy by 2.5%. I would like to point out that as we look at the differential between graduate and undergraduate, it's important to note that the university, from a positioning standpoint, believes that the graduate tuition rate should be higher, repeat, higher than the undergraduate rate. By having this 1% differential this year, this will be the first time in many years where the graduate rate is actually higher than the undergraduate rate. So that's the root behind the distinction we're trying to make here in terms of a 1% differential between graduate and undergraduate. Are there any questions concerning the university's recommendation for approving a tuition rate increase for fiscal year 15?
Mr. Pinkleton, I don't have any questions other trustees may, but I do think it's important to point out that your committee or the committee did also look at the landscape in Illinois and where we are with respect to other universities. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
That's correct. We did look at other universities across the state of Illinois, those that are reporting at this point in time within the Chicago area, looking at the University of Illinois at Chicago and Northeastern. Both of those universities were, in fact, bringing forth recommendations for a tuition increase. University of Illinois at Chicago was bringing forth a 1.7% increase, and Northeastern was bringing forth a 5.9% increase. That being said, even outside of the Chicagoland area, all state of Illinois institutions were bringing forth a recommendation for tuition increases with the exception of Governor's State. So I think as we think about a 3% recommendation on the undergraduate rate, which is obviously the biggest portion of our population, it is in line with other institutions across the state. And I think most of us would just commonly believe that, you know, when you talk about a cost of living increase, which will affect all of our expenses across the university, this is really in line. So the university is not going to get in a huge cash windfall, let's call it, as a direct result of this 3% increase in tuition. We do need to maintain a financial base that allows us to ensure the ongoing ability to adhere to the contracts that we've committed to, many of which have normal cost of living escalations associated with them.
Thank you.
With this increase, where do we stand compared to the other universities as to the cost of going to this university?
With the tuition and fee increase that we're bringing forth, we still will be at the low end of the state of Illinois. At this stage of the game, the Chicago State University would be the third cheapest university in the state.
Thank you.
Any further questions concerning the tuition and fee recommended increases? Okay. That's all I have on that resolution.
I am calling the resolution. Is there a vote?
Oh, it's got a vote on?
Yeah. I move we accept the resolution.
Second.
Trustee Curtin?
Aye.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Lake?
Yes.
Trustee Raina?
Aye.
Trustee Smith?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Zolar?
Yes.
The next resolution we have for the board's consideration deals with room and board. As we all know, there is a residence hall on campus that has an occupancy of approximately 300 beds. The students who choose to stay on campus do enter into a contractual relationship, which gives them the opportunity to stay in the residence hall for one fiscal year. For the recommended fiscal year 15 time period, we're bringing forth a request to increase the residence hall rate by 3%. This will still,
I'm sorry, I hate to interrupt you right now, but before we go to the residence hall, there's a point you didn't make that I think you should make regarding the tuition increases, and that's which of our students does it apply to?
It's important to note that the 3% rate that we're bringing forth does apply directly to the undergraduate community, specifically new incoming students, new incoming freshmen, and all incoming transfer students. There's also a concept called TNT, Truth and Tuition, which will hold the rate that those new freshmen coming into the university have for 120 credit hours or 5 years, whichever comes first.
So if I'm presently a student at the university, this increase will not affect me. Is that correct?
That is correct. Okay. That is correct.
Thank you.
Good point. Transitioning back to room and board, we're bringing forth a recommendation to have a 3% increase in the room and board. There are two parts to the cost associated with students who stay in the residence hall. One would be board, the meal plan program. The second would be the actual residence hall rate. We were asking for a 3% rate that will affect both components of that expense, recognizing that the university does have a third-party relationship with a dining vendor. Part of our agreed-upon contractual base with Sodexo, our third-party dining vendor, is that they do have the opportunity to have a cost-of-living increase based on the CPI index every year. And so we do have a very reasonable expectation that they will exercise that option. And so a part of this 3% is contractual anyway. The other part of it, which is really somewhat up for discussion, would be relative to the actual residence hall component, the room piece of the room and board number. So combined with the current, with both costs included, the 3% increase will still put us towards the bottom end of expense as far as comparable state institutions. So as it stands right now, we were, with fiscal year 4 reporting, we were the ninth cheapest residence hall across the state. And even with this 3% increase, we would expect to maintain that ranking. Any questions concerning the recommendation for room and board?
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
What is the average rate of occupancy for the resident hall?
We currently have about 250 students in the residence hall. Aspirationally, again, as I indicated earlier, the total occupancy is 300. As we look at comparable institutions, I know for a fact that the University of Illinois Chicago generally runs between 80 and 85%. Aspirationally, you'd like to get very close to 100. In a hall that is our size, I think 90% is a reasonable aspiration in the short term.
But right now we're about
80%.
80%.
Right. Other questions?
May I ask for a motion to adopt this resolution?
So moved.
Second.
Trustee Curtin?
Aye.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Lake?
Yes.
Trustee Raina?
Yes.
Trustee Smith?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Zolar?
Aye.
The next resolution we're bringing forth for your consideration is for professional program fees for the College of Health Sciences. I've asked Dr. Roundtree to join me for a very brief discussion on the intent of that resolution.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. The College of Health Sciences is asking for a program fee to be applied to students who are in the professional programs and are both our undergraduate and graduate degrees. Just to clarify in terms of our students come into the college, into our disciplines, as undergraduates taking primarily prerequisite courses, and then there is a point in their careers that they then apply to our professional programs where they are discipline specific, nursing, occupational therapy, health information administration, community health. We are asking that at the time they apply to these professional programs that we institute a program fee to assist us in addressing the intensity of supplies, equipment, and faculty needed to address those professional level programs. We are asking for it on a cost per credit hour basis. It is very similar to what's done across the state, and we are using the pharmacy model that we have here that's very similar. It would apply to our nursing, health information, community health, occupational therapy, and then to our master's programs in public health, nursing, and occupational therapy. Are there any questions?
What would that fee, what was the amount?
The fee would range depending on the program, because some of the programs are more equipment intensive, such as nursing compared to community health, but it would not exceed, it would be based on the number of credit hours per semester, not to exceed 3,000 per semester for a student taking 17 credit hours.
I have a question. Is this prompted so that you can ensure that all students have all the equipment for each course?
Yes, we unfortunately, because we have not had any differential, our students have been absorbing the costs out of their pockets, and it hasn't been implied to their educational funds, and also the departments have been kind of not being able to move up to state of the art and keep up with practice.
So hopefully this will ensure better quality of the students' education because they'll have their equipment.
Yes.
So a student that is receiving scholarship funds, those funds would
also
cover these?
Yes.
Makes sense.
Any other questions? May I ask for a motion to adopt this resolution?
So moved.
Second.
Trustee Curtin?
Aye.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Leak?
Yes.
Trustee Raina?
Yes.
Trustee Smith?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Zoller?
Aye.
Final resolution we'd like to bring to your attention today for your consideration is for laboratory class and miscellaneous fees. The university is going to be adding three classes for the fall of 2014. These are three new classes. Two are in the, we'll be dealing with geography, and one is for Spanish interpretation. There are software and other minor infrastructure requirements to initiate these classes into the university community, and we're bringing forth a request to have a $20 fee per class added to students who choose to enroll in that particular class. Are there any questions concerning this this fee increase?
Hearing no questions, may I ask for a motion to adopt this resolution?
So moved.
Second.
Trustee Curtin?
Aye.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Leak?
Yes.
Trustee Raina?
Yes.
Trustee Smith?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Zoller?
Aye.
Thank you, trustees. This concludes my report. I'm sorry.
Before you leave,
yes,
I should have asked during the the academic affairs report, but however, I was concerned about the West Side project. I see the funds are allocated, and are you able to tell me, in addition to what we've seen here today, how much has been allocated for the West Side campus and the steering committee? And I would like to hear something from the steering committee because I have some recommendations, Mr. Chairman, for how we can really be in, make that a progressive part of our agenda. So, question, are you able to tell us how much has been expended so far? Or you can get that to me?
The university is recommending from the, for the fiscal year 15 time period, total capital for the project of approximately $56.1 million. That excludes operating expense that we are looking to put forth a good faith argument to the state to give us some assistance on. Currently, there's been $40 million, which is appropriated, of which, as the provost indicated earlier, we have received $4 million. Of that $4 million, we have paid for the feasibility study. There are costs that are being anticipated to acquire the land. That cost has not been expended yet. And so, pulling from memory, I'd say we probably have spent about $1 million right now. $1 million of the four that we've got access to. So we've got $40 million appropriated. $4 million has been released in the technical sense. $1 million has been spent. All
right. Good. Thank you.
Okay. And if I can just add to that for the trustees, I think the initial plan was to take the $4 million and use it to actually acquire the property, and the $36 million is for the actual building of the structure.
That's correct. That's correct.
And we have to go back and continually ask for money from that appropriation.
I see. And is there a timetable we've set in place?
Well, I think process-wise, the way it works is if we are able to consistently demonstrate progress towards the end game, which is identifying a site, constructing a site, or purchasing a building, what have you, then we will be able to put forth a good faith argument why those funds should be released.
Okay, and then the last would be the steering committee, and as to how often do they meet, what information do they share with us?
The steering committee meets about every 60 to 90 days. Fair, would that be a fair assumption?
Every other month.
Every other month, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. In terms of, are you asking for a copy of the steering committee's?
I appreciate it.
Okay, I would defer to.
I don't know if the other trustees would find that interesting, but I would.
I'll defer to Fair to get that documentation to you.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
I have a question before you leave, Mr. Pinkleton.
Yes,
sorry,
sir.
Thank you. First of all, thank you so much for your transparency, always. My question has to refer to, in the business enterprise program, what efforts are being made to level the playing field and begin including our Latino community as part of the vendors at CSU? I wanted to know, are there efforts being made? And then secondly to that, you know, students always want to know, you know, are we making progress? You know, in your opinion, are we making progress? There's always this shadow of CSU's not receiving funding, but compared to everybody else. But I'm not of that opinion. But I want to ask you, because students have addressed that to me. Can you briefly let me know the answer?
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
The university does make a concerted effort to engage suppliers that can help us deal with our needs from the purchasing function. There is, there are state requirements that, or not requirements, but guidelines that speak to the level of minority participation. We don't actually require a vendor to be a minority to fulfill a particular contractual need. It's an aspiration that we include in our thinking when we are evaluating suppliers. That being said, there is certainly an open mind, and the university is interested in entertaining any alternatives that can be brought to our attention, any suppliers that can be brought to our attention that speak specifically to the needs of the institution. On an ongoing basis, we do publish the university's procurement needs, mm-hmm. and any supplier who is registered with the state of Illinois has an opportunity to see the specific requests that are being made at any point in time around the university's needs for goods and services. So it's really an awareness thing. There's a process that's in place where you can certainly get full purview of what our needs are at a particular point in time. In terms of outreach, right now within the procurement function, that's really not a part of what we are tasked with doing. We certainly are able at any point in time to meet with vendors who are just generally speaking interested in providing services to the university. But in terms of a developmental component, if you're asking whether we go into the community today, into the African-American community, into the Hispanic community from a procurement standpoint, I don't think that there's that effort that's going on. There is certainly an awareness from all levels of people that are involved with the procurement process that the university is very much interested in engaging in business with minority suppliers. And I think to the extent that the president reinforces that message throughout his leadership, everybody would embrace that as they go out into the community and just talk it up as they have an opportunity to do just that.
Thank you so much.
If I may, back to the Westside campus for a second and Trustee Leek's question. We'll have someone from the committee at the next board meeting to give an in-depth report on what's happening at the on the Westside campus. And just so the board members will know, we're in the process right now of obtaining appraisals on two specific sites. Now, those sites haven't been disclosed because, of course, we don't want the owners to find out too soon. But we are having appraisals done on two specific sites that the project manager and president will be negotiating with the owners after the appraisals are complete.
Thank you.
Thank you, trustees. This concludes my report.
Thank you. Mr. Schumacher?
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Mr. Chair, Vice Chair, trustees, and Mr. President. He's right there. Now he's over there. Okay. To start out, Cougar Athletics, we are poised for something good, something great over the next couple of years. I think the structure of our athletic department now is of a best practices model that the NCAA, especially amongst lower resource institutions. So I'm very excited about where our structure, where our coaching staff is, and where our mission as a department from a student-athlete standpoint is going. And speaking of the student-athletes, about 2 weeks ago we honored our student-athletes for Student First, and that would be that 106 of our 137 athletes finishing up this past semester achieved a 3.0 or higher. So 106 of 137, including nine, yes, it's very exciting. That includes nine student athletes with a perfect grade point average of 4.0 in four different sports, and that includes baseball. And I point out baseball because we had two of them on our baseball program. Historically, baseball and football have been the lowest performing graduation rate sports in the country. We're trying to change that paradigm. And Coach Jocelyn and his staff has brought in quality students to get it done in the classroom. And at the same time, I think we're 6-4, and we have a weekend stand down south right now versus McNeese State. Two of our losses came to the University of Missouri, so our baseball program is looking very good with a full roster, and we're excited about that program. Speaking of continued progress in academics, when I took over as athletic director, we were right at a 20 ACT this past fall. With our incoming freshmen, we're right at 22. Our goal as a department is to have all of our incoming freshmen with at least a 23 ACT. So we're moving there. Also, the annual progress rate, it's a famous number amongst the NCAA called APR. It's been around its inception for grading out universities on a point system based on retention, current eligibility, graduation, things like that. It's been 12 years. In all 12 years, Chicago State has been on some kind of penalty, some kind of suspension of whatever it would be, depending on which sport. This fall, for the first time, not one CSU athletic team will be on APR probation or penalty, and that's historic. Another part of our strategic plan as a department is called Cougar 360. That's kind of what we headline everything about. We also have a sub-program called Cougar 360, which is a competition amongst all our athletic teams. and this is a four-point contest. They earn points in academic achievement. They earn points in athletics, how they do well competition-wise, their community service that they put in, as well as their career development. We had our first winner this past fall, which the president honored at halftime of our basketball game 2 weeks ago, and that would be men's basketball, took that award home out of all of our 14 teams. So not only do we have one of our premier programs getting it done in the classroom, but they're doing it in the community and doing all the right things to represent Chicago State. So they won that award. 11 of our 14 sports are competing right now, so it's the busiest time of the year. Our men's and women's basketball teams depart on Tuesday for Las Vegas for the first WAC Western Athletic Conference championship. So we're excited to be in the Orleans Center, and men's basketball's got to—we got to win two games to get to the championship. And from the championship, who knows? And if you win the championship, you're in the NCAA tournament. So it's what we've aspired to get to. It's a Cinderella story. It could be. But stranger things have happened, and we're in a very competitive league where everybody's bunched up together, so it's anybody's race right now. Also, the boys of summer, as I put it, talk about the baseball. We're going to be opening up the baseball stadium for the first home game next week, snow permitting. we need a little melt-off, and our facilities department has been outstanding in helping us remove snow as we go here to stay on top of it. But we do open up with WAC play versus Seattle University, and we look forward. We also have a tremendous amount of pressure being put on us from many outside because of the weather to use our baseball stadium because of the artificial surface. CPS, the Catholic League, other local colleges, that would include Notre Dame and Northern Illinois, will be utilizing our stadium because of its nature with the lights, the combination of lights and artificial turf. Also, heading in the spring, right now we have our first team that's the preseason pick. Our women's golf team is the preseason pick to win the WAC. They won two tournaments, which in the women's program, that's the first time any of our golf teams have ever won a tournament as a Division I institution. So we did that past fall, which puts us in a position of now we're the top dog in the league. So that's a good thing to do or to have happen to us. The media coverage has now intensified because of the NCAA tournament. We have a lot more national media requests than we've had before. I think our WAC membership, the academic emphasis and the moderate success we're starting to have is paying dividends from a national scope, and that's why we chose the WAC, because we're in every major media market. We're not a regional conference. We're a national conference, and Chicago should be on the board as a national because of the national city. Lastly, I'm just going to close. I was nominated at the convention to serve as the representative of the Western Athletic Conference on the national committee. My peers nominated me, so I accepted that. So starting in June, I will be on the NCAA National Committee representing the Western Athletic Conference. So that's a first for Chicago State, have an AD on that kind of committee, and I'm really excited about the voice that I can, you know, portray from a type of school that we are and the type of league that we belong in. So I'm excited about that. I'm open for any questions.
I have a question. First of all, thank you so much for being here, and thank you for everything that you're doing. The students recognize that. In a conversation I had with a couple of students and with the coach, I'd like to know a little bit about, for the athletes, what are their, is there an athletic graduation rate?
Yes, there is.
And before you answer that, because I'm interested in finding out, you know, is there a reason for that graduation rate, and what innovative strategies do you have to make sure that these athletes are not only, you know, performing at a top-notch level, but are also receiving a fantastic education here at Chicago State and doing well? So
there is structure. I mean, athletics itself is a structure, and it creates structure for a student to know that he's regimented to go to class, and then he goes to practice, and he has to go to games, and he has meetings, and he has to study, and we have study hall. We have every athlete of ours is mandated study hall. So that's one thing. I think the thing with the NCAA that's different than the rest of the institution is the fact is that the NCAA, with the annual progress rate, holds you accountable for retention rates.
Right.
So if you don't have those retention rates, those don't translate into graduation rates. Our department goal is to get to 85%. This past academic year, we're at 64% graduation rate. That's going to take another 2 years of moving forward with the structure that we have in academic services and our eligibility area. So I would imagine that those numbers are going to spike, especially as we come out of APR issues, because that means our retention rates are going up. And that'll affect graduation rate. It all is a trickle-down effect. Now, we still have the same not issues, but the same demographics that we have moved a little bit on that the rest of the institution is, which we have a lot of junior college transfers. So sometimes that number, that federal graduation rate isn't as always right on. So we have to, as the provost had talked about, is the combination of the two, which the NC already does, and it's called graduation success rate. And those goals are around 95%. Even if they come here and they leave and they graduate somewhere else, we get credit for it that they started here, or that they started somewhere else and then they graduate. Mm-hmm. There's factors that involve. So athletics is held in a very quantitative manner, different than other entities. So it's a challenge, but it's a good challenge, and it has good results. I should say great results, mm-hmm. because we graduate kids. Good. And, you know, men's basketball, I said it the last morning, all eight kids are going to graduate by summer. That is a feat. That is a story to be told from the highest mountain for Coach Dilty and what he did to bring those kids in and get them to go to class. And I think six out of the eight are going to be first-time family graduates of college.
That's great.
And it's just, yeah. It's a great story. It really is. Hopefully that answers your question.
Yes, it does, sir. Thank you.
This question may be a little premature, but now I congratulate you because of the fact that now you'll be dealing from a national perspective as to our affairs dealing with our student athletes. Is there any concern now that you know about, or as to whether or not this question of student athletes seeking to unionize, is that a concern nationally, or is that a concern from you at this point, or is it just premature? Or
I think that's a twofold. I honestly, amongst my colleagues, and we talk weekly, and we're going to have more discussion with the presidents and next week out while we're in Las Vegas for the tournament. I really don't have any confidence that they're going to unionize. I just don't see that's how that's possible. I think the students, as the president I experienced out at the convention, there is a movement. And my more concern is where that movement amongst the top five conferences in the country, and that is to move to pay athletes or a stipend of some sort. And to me, that will start to separate us from Illinois in a major way. And there's repercussions for that, and I don't like what some of the...
Separate us from what?
A University of Illinois that has the resources to say, I'm recruiting the same young lady for tennis. And we can offer a full scholarship, they offer a full scholarship, but Illinois comes in and says, I'm going to give you an extra $2,000 a semester on top of it. I know that we don't have the resources to compete. So it becomes, where does that kid want to go? I mean, every kid's going to still chase the almighty dollar, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. It's a fact of life, so it hurts us. I'm more worried about where those bigger five conferences having their own autonomy to do the things that they want, set their own rules. They said, hey, you can come along with us on those rules, but you just have to pay, just like we have to, we pay. And they're not excluding us from the rules, but they want to have a chance to start to separate themselves. And that started from a football perspective, but it's going to move into the basketball and all the other sports. It's going to separate Division One in a great way. I'm more concerned about that.
That will have a very deleterious effect on a number of universities throughout the country, where the elite universities will pull every student that they want. They will literally pay for them. Mm-hmm. And it would have a very negative effect on other universities, on the majority of universities in the country, so that these elite universities can just cream these students. I think it will set athletics back. Seriously.
Set it back.
Yes. With these elite universities, it's about one thing, money. It's not about the student, it's about money. They make big money. If you make, for example, if we win our two games and we go three games, mm-hmm. and we go to NCAA,
right,
How much money do we get for the first one?
Well, the school gets a unit. There's two ways. We get $150,000 for the first one.
Boom.
The school gets it. And then there's units that you earn amongst the revenue sharing of the NCAA and the TV contract. And then if the more schools you have in the tournament, the more units you earn. So not only do you get paid out individually, but then the league gets money that goes into a pot as well, which the league then decides how they want to disperse that money.
Then,
like
go ahead. Then if we win the second game,
it's $300,000. So it's that's a pay for play right there.
I mean, you really.
That's pay for play.
So these universities, these elite universities, they're about making money right now. And they know that if they can say, I give you $4,000 in addition to the scholarship if you come to my school, and the kid may have been thinking about going to Chicago State. He may have been thinking about going to Grambling. May have been thinking about going to Grambling. Those universities are going to be really in a much more difficult situation to survive, because athletics is a very important part of having a total comprehensive educational experience at a university. And if they do that within 10 years, you will see a very deleterious effect take place on universities that are not part of this elite.
And this all, again, this all stemmed due to football. This is all has to do with not sharing the football bowl money anymore. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the year, each institution receives a check from the NCAA, which is an even distribution. They want to keep the bowl money, the five top conferences, off to a separate pot and not that have back in the main pot that we used to all draw from. They want to have the autonomy to set their own rules because they're making their own. They're making 80% of the money. And that's what they want to do. They want their ball and take it and go home with it. And
so the problem is really not the students. The problem is the adults, as always.
Yeah, the issue
is not corrupting the students. And let's face it, they're making millions of dollars in revenue from television. Something has to be done where there is some kind of distribution to the students as well. They're being used as a product. Who wouldn't go to a university that can assure them a certain amount of money? I mean, it is the American way. So I think that the fact that you're on the national committee, that your voice can be utilized, but the problem is not the students. I think that the media demonizes the students for the money part, but it really is the adults making that decision. Right. That money is being earned every single year, and you just heard where for the brackets now, I think, who was it, Buffett talked about, you can get $1 billion if you can choose the brackets in March Madness. Mm-hmm. It's a huge amount of money out there that corporations and the TV is really controlling. And I think that something has to be done more equitable. These students, many of them are very poor, from very poor backgrounds, but they're being used as a product. Something has to be done, I think, at the top level to ensure equity, and something has to be given to the students because they're being used and they're being marketed as a product.
I agree with you on that, but you're right, it is an adult game right now. At the convention, there was five of the top, some of the top chancellors and presidents of the largest institutions that are for this. I think what really hurts us, and I don't know if I'm going to be able at the national level fight that fight, but my fight's going to be from the compliance end and from the eligibility end that will protect this so we're on an even playing field for those things. I can't do nothing about how the money's going to go, but I sure can prevent Illinois from coming cherry-picking one of our freshmen that they saw develop at Chicago State, and now he can transfer to Illinois to make some money. I'm going to try to prevent that kind of stuff because that's cheating. It's no part in that. And so those are the fights I think schools like Chicago State and Utah Valley or Seattle University, those are the fights that we're going to go against.
Thank you. But as a practical matter, what you're fighting against, the elite university paying student athletes, that's already happening. It's just done under the table. And then when it comes to light, the student winds up being punished, or they'll take away his Heisman Trophy or something like that after the fact. But the elite athletes are being paid to go to school right now. And so what I believe one of your charges should be is how to bring that system where they can be paid without taking it under the table, and maybe find a way to get schools like us more into play in that process. But the elite athletes are being paid.
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Schumacher, I just want to congratulate you because you've done a really fabulous job over the past year.
Yeah.
Really appreciate it.
Yeah, I would be remiss here as a longtime officer of the Chicago Catholic League to not thank the university and thank the athletic director for the experience that the Catholic League had out here a week or so ago. We played our for the first time in the league's history, we had a season-end tournament, and that ended up we played the third and fourth and the championship game here at the JCC. Jones. I have to tell you that for the athletes, the coaches, the parents, the fans, it was a remarkable experience. The staff over there was extraordinary. It was wonderful exposure for CSU, and I'm always proud of being an alum of this institution. I really, truly am, but I held my head just a tad higher that night. I was delighted with it. It was great, and everybody was delighted with it, and I'm hoping this is something we can do on a regular basis. So if you would pass along the thanks of the CCL to everybody, Dan, that would be great. Thank you.
I'll call it a question. It looks like, Dan, you've got the structure in place. We're compliant. We meet the requirements. In fact, we exceed the requirements. Now we have to change the scores of the ball games.
You know what? That's awesome that you just said that to me. I want the question to be asked, how are we going to win?
We'll get there.
How are we going to win?
Here's my question. How can we get the two major Chicago newspapers
to write about it,
to talk about the stuff you just talked about?
That's right.
About the graduation rate,
we
the
ACT
average
scores.
Why do they have to ignore us? They don't even put our scores in the newspaper.
I'll give you a like I always am, very direct.
Chicago
Tribune, a discussion with the sports editor, just point blank told my media relations person, people are not interested in Chicago State sports. So that was a direct.
Gee, I get the impression that Tribune's very interested
That's right.
in Chicago State.
All the time, in a negative way.
But all they're waiting for is one of us to trip and fall.
I would say, 2 weeks ago, we had
to help us up.
Sunday's editorial.
Right.
I agree with you. It's a delicate process, but that we have to earn some of that, too.
Yeah.
And we have to put a little bit more history of earning
it,
building some more credibility and winning in the win-loss column, because that's what they care about. The sports section doesn't care about what our graduation rate is. They want to see what wins and losses are and what men's basketball is going to
That's
do.
True.
They're not covering our women's volleyball. No team, no institution has volleyball covered or other things. But the Sun-Times has been very gracious. 2 or 3 weeks ago, we had a featured article about the progress of our program.
Very good.
And we've had a lot of positive feedback, and we had a nice article on a national blog, Mid-Major Madness, and so it's coming. It's coming. I'm not going to point the finger, but that was a direct answer back from the Tribune, and that's fine. So then we have to earn it, and that's okay with me.
Excellent.
You're doing a great job, Ed.
Good job.
Is that it? Thank you very much. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you.
Good day.
Mr. Shindy.
Good morning, trustees, President Watson. I'm Prashant Shinde. I'm the Chief Information Officer at Chicago State University. It's always tough coming after Dan. I always have to do that, so. But the reason I'm here is to go over the information security policy. Information Technology Division at CSU is currently going through an IT risk assessment. And what that does is it tells us the level of information on each computer at CSU, whether it's confidential, it's restricted, or it's public. And if we find that it's confidential or restricted, we can encrypt those computers. One of the outcomes of that assessment is the information security policy. There are some action items in terms of access controls that we have to follow. Most of it we are already doing. Some of it we are not. This document will become a guiding, it's really a guiding document on how we will take care of the data at CSU.
Mm-hmm.
We've been hearing about data theft in universities almost every week now, and this is really important. This will let us protect our data. Do you have any questions?
Seen it. How much does it cost?
Well, the encryption, most of the cost is associated to the encryption software. Encryption. And the encryption software is about $40,000. And we've already done that investment. Right. And almost most of our administrative computers are already encrypted. So we are now moving into the academic units. So.
Good. Sounds good.
Any questions? Any other questions? May I have a motion to adopt the resolution?
So moved.
No, there's no resolution.
It's
oh, I'm sorry. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
No, I'm
sorry. Next, we'll move on to our facilities update. Trustee Smith.
Yes, for the facilities update, we're calling for the Assistant Director of Facilities, Mrs. Monique Horton.
Good morning, trustees.
Good morning.
So we have an abbreviated report, and we have no resolutions this morning. So we do just want to briefly speak. We had a great meeting. We were invited to speak with the SGA, and we appreciated being invited to that, where they expressed their concerns. There were others who were there as well, and I think it formed a great partnership that we'll continue to have. We have also been dealing with the snow, and I think that our staff has been doing an excellent job in trying to remove it from both the interior of campus, as well as the arterial roads, as well as icing, de-icing. And just we have had some challenges with pipe ruptures and things, but because of the rapid responses, we really did not have any loss of property or really a lot of damage. So that is just a great thing to report. So we've had an unprecedented winter, and really we've had over 12 storms, and I think we're really just doing a great job trying to deal with that, if I may say so myself.
Well, we agree with you. We have done an excellent job.
During the time we spoke with SGA, we also mentioned some of the projects that we're pursuing, and I will also be brief and give you guys a chance to ask any questions. One is the electrical upgrade. We are working through the schedule so that we can keep our targeted completion date of the 2014 end of summer, beginning of fall date. We're also working with the Capital Development Board on two projects, which are Robinson University Center and childcare. For Robinson University, there are two projects. One takes care of the exterior, the other the interior. For the exterior, we are trying to hire the contractor, but because CDB actually managed that, they hold that entire process. We are doing also a partnership with Farah and her team working to obtain funding for the interior project as well. We do have an architect on board who is programming that piece as we speak. Child care is also a project that's managed by the Capital Development Board. Again, we're working with Farah's team to pursue additional funding to add to the already $7.4 million that we have. They are currently doing programming and schematic design for the facility. For the building hall envelope, you can take a walk right outside of this building and see the construction that is going on. They have completed all of the window replacements that they're going to do for the third floor, and we'll be moving to the second floor, which is going to be great for our energy conservation, because we will be moving from single pane to double pane glazing for the entire building. And then, just lastly, we submitted some of the procurement pieces for the virtual hospital. We are going to do a qualifications-based selection to get architects on board to begin the design for the second floor of Douglas Hall to have our programs, and I do know that Dr. Roundtree is very excited about that, as well as others in the health sciences department. And then lastly, for the College of Pharmacy, the entire third floor will then be dedicated to the pharmacy program, which we are also doing information to bidders so that they can bid on the projects. So with that, I'm going to ask if you have any questions.
Where's the child care facility going to be?
The child care facility is going to be an addition to the existing education building. So it will be added. Right now, there are three shops.